be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back here on Monday Night Talk. Sorry if I sound a little out of breath as we're kind of running around the room, putting everything back in order after that fantastic forum. Joining me, he's kind of like a sub co-host this evening, Mr. Bob Hayes, who's been here before in the same capacity, sir. Your thoughts on tonight's forum?
I can't believe, Kevin, it was just such a good format. All four candidates came. I think the people of Marshfield have got a very tough decision to make. You had four very qualified candidates who all bring different perspectives to the table as to where Marshfield should be heading in the next year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever the term is that they're all vying for. I was a little bit surprised that Marshfield, with the residency it has, only has three selectmen.
Mm-hmm.
We're smaller communities, Whitman's and Hanson's and Abington's and East Bridgewater's, that have way less residents, have five. So I was kind of shocked. So you learn something new every day, Kevin. It's very interesting to do this type of a format.
So I guess I would ask you this, and then that is, you yourself being somebody who is with a school committee, you see this in the two communities you serve. Yes, no?
What was the question exactly? I mean, as far as having five selectmen, I see it all the time.
Just seeing the political nature of the beast, you know what I mean? Seeing folks who are jockeying into position, who want to have a conversation, you know, in regards to running for office and holding a political forum like this.
Well, I think it's one of the most important things that goes on in a small town, because small town government is alive and well in every one of these little communities. And I think that town meeting itself is probably the purest form of town government that you can have. So to circumvent it in a small community, I think, does a disservice, because I believe, I heard every candidate loud and clear, and I believe that the candidates should all had one clear message. Let the people come to town meeting and speak.
Definitely.
And as Christine finished up with Christine Jane, she said, if you don't come and voice your opinion or voice your vote, then you really don't have a voice in town government, and you have no one to blame.
It's interesting that you say that, because we're looking to transition from the political forum. I want to at least get your, as you were kind of an observer in the other room waiting to come in and sit in here with me to co-host this evening, and I just want to let folks know that our guest is on the line. We're going to get to Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson in just 30 seconds, but I wanted to thank you, Bob, for at least chiming in and giving your two cents on the process, as we do it here on a regular basis on 95.9 WATD.
Again, Kevin, I took 6 or 7 pages of notes. I'm going to be doing this type of a forum in Hanson. With Hanson, by the way, has four candidates, and they're all very well versed on what's going on in town. So I grabbed a few ideas from this. I thought it was fabulous, and I'm looking forward to it. Education is everything.
Yeah, you'll get it at no fee. No extra cost. So
thanks.
We hope you enjoy it. Now, I want to ask you in regards to, there was a little bit of a controversy last week in regards to an elected official, a state representative, who actually posted something on social media in regards to potential law enforcement activities within the community she serves. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I actually read all sides of it, Kevin, because you like to hear everything before you jump to any conclusions.
Sure.
I mean, there were people that were immediately calling for her to resign.
They then still are.
Yeah, then you heard
they
the other
are.
Side of the coin saying it's freedom of speech, and there were some police-type officials, police officers, and
right. District
attorneys, and everybody had their two cents worth, so to speak, to say where it should go and what they think should be done. And it's really, really a difficult situation, because where does it stop? Where does the freedom of speech end?
Well, what's great is the gentleman who's joining us on the phone line right now. We have a Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson joining us. Sheriff, thank you for joining us here on Monday Night Talk.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
Probably the first question I have to ask you is when did you hear about this Facebook post in regards to a rumored ICE raid that would possibly take place over a 2-day period?
Well, actually, ironically, I was on my way to the, I was literally on my way to the U.S. Capitol to testify before Congress, and on the whole issue around reestablishing law enforcement initiatives around immigration. And I got a call from one of my staff members up here and had indicated what had just been published. So it was at that point, actually, that I had learned about it. And it was actually something I just added sort of ad-libbed at the end of my testimony before Congress, because I found it to be so outrageous. And to the point of the question that you just asked a moment ago, where it ends is, it ends with, as far as I'm concerned, the cutoff point is when you've struck justice. And, you know, there is, of course, freedom of speech for everyone until such time that if someone knowingly is giving, say, there's a drug smugglers in your community and there's going to be a DEA raid. At the point where you go out of your way to assist these people to avoid justice is a turning point where you've gone beyond the pale with regards to the First Amendment. You're putting people at risk. And the other part that I think is really important to point out, you know, if I were, say, one of the transnational gang members in MS-13 or whatever, in that particular community in Brockton, and I was working, you know, dealing drugs and smuggling drugs or whatever else, and I got that tip off, I may be in an apartment or house with, you know, five other gang members. Once we get that tip, if we're illegal, we're probably going to say, hey, we can't take a chance and leave this house now because we may very well be the ones that they're sort of targeting and surveilling. So we'll just hunker down, grab our arsenal, and when these guys come to get us, we're just going to open up on them. And that's unfortunately happening more and more in this country with the assaults on police officers and the lack of restraint by any criminal when it comes to, not any criminal, but many criminals, particularly gang members who are out and won't think twice about killing cops. So this is a very serious, serious thing, particularly for someone who is an elected official, to have not only sent out an email saying that she had heard it, social media, Facebook post, but also what to do to prevent yourself from being caught. And if you do get caught, here's the numbers to call if you're in trouble.
I guess I would ask you this. Have you heard anything further in regards to the state representative, in regards to her reasoning behind? Because we did have her on here last Monday night, and her reasoning behind what she did was the fact that she was trying to let the people, her constituents, know what was going on in case they saw this large police activity, and also that she felt that she was helping. ICE by putting this warning forth.
Well, first of all, let's start with the ICE part. That to me is nothing more than backpedaling after she realized that she really shouldn't have done it. I think, because if you really wanted to help as an elected official and you wanted to help local law enforcement be aware of that kind of thing, what you do is you pick up the phone and call the chief, or you would call Immigration Customs Enforcement. You wouldn't put it out over social media if you wanted to help them. Always the element of surprise in a raid is important. And she had, you know, heard this rumor. Would she have done the same thing with DEA?
Mm-hmm.
You know, would she have said, I was helping DEA by putting the word out there that they were going to, the word was that they were going to be doing a drug raid somewhere? I don't think so. And the other side of it is warning your constituents about what? Who, you're blanketly putting something out there. Would you do that again? Would you do it for a drug raid? You know, you heard it, there might be a drug raid in a certain part of Brockton. Are you going to notify the entire, put it out on social media where everybody has access, including maybe the smugglers that they're going after, or these vicious gang members? I don't think so.
Right.
So that's just not true. And why would you put, on top of that, why would she have put the instructions on how to avoid being caught if that were really true? She was not helping her constituents about saying that, hey, don't do this, don't do that, because you might, you know, that would be irrelevant information for her constituents unless they were some of the people that were being looked for.
I will tell you, Sheriff, that I did ask her, A, did she feel that she committed a crime? She felt that she did not commit a crime by doing what she did. And I also asked her if she thought that she might have been putting members of law enforcement in harm's way. And I say this because a part of me wishes that I could have taken back the question and re-asked it, because I recalled afterwards, and I had a couple of people who had reached out to me and reminded me that I believe, in fact, this particular state representative has a member of law enforcement that, you know, is out there, not on a local level, but more so on a state level. And I would yeah. I wish I could have asked, what if said family member was in harm's way? Would you have still done the same thing, or were you not cognizant of that?
Yes, and that's, you know, look, that's a great point. And I think that, you know, to openly do something like that and put everybody at risk. And for, by the way, under federal law, under Title 8, Section 1324, it clearly states anyone who knows of someone to be in the country illegally, who attempts to harbor or conceal them, is guilty of a felony under federal law, up to 5 years in jail per alien that you attempt to hide or conceal. And so if you're giving people a heads up to get away from ICE, and ICE is targeting those people, you've basically given them cover. And it's interesting because I got an email from a woman maybe 2 days after this happened, saying, you know, I'm really pleased with what you've said in regards to this state representative and how irresponsible she was, because she said I have a nephew who's a serious heroin addict, and the person that's been dealing him these drugs is an illegal, and he's been around our community for quite a while, and as soon as that notice went out, he took off for 2 days. So, you know, look, we don't know all the other situations that may have happened. Sure. When that went out, I'm sure there were a number of them that probably went and looked for cover. But the reality is, you don't do that as an elected official and undermine a major operation by any authority, whether it's local police, state, federal, it doesn't matter. That they do these things for reasons. They do these surges and raids for a reason. They need the element of surprise for officer safety. They need it also to do everything they can to make sure that they get these people by surprise and get them off the streets, out of the neighborhoods, so they'll continue to harm the constituents of people like Ms. Dubois.
Yeah, we're speaking with the Bristol County Sheriff, Thomas Hutch, and he is our guest for this segment. Bob, I'm sitting here hogging and asking all these questions. Would you like to ask a question of the sheriff about this situation?
Well, Sheriff, I've got a little bit different play on it that I had some people came forward and said, her job as a state rep is to vote on laws and try to make laws and to put things through. It's one of her jobs. And obviously she didn't agree with this job, so she took it into her own hands and put this broadcast out. What do you think?
Well, yeah, she's a state representative. As far as I'm concerned, any public official, you know, whatever you can do to help people in any community within the law, you know, that's your job. I mean, it's, you know, people often say to me, well, why are you involved in immigration and why are you involved in, you know, I mean, I've helped develop programs in Portugal. Some might say that's not the job of the sheriff, but it does tie in directly to this whole immigration issue and keeping deportees over there so they don't come back, create more crimes, cost us more money to get them out, court systems and all that. So there are things beyond being just passing bills and filing legislation, because you have to be in the community and find out what are the concerns, what are the problems and issues. But your job doesn't mean that you take over the responsibility, say in this case, of law enforcement, or try to undermine it and decide what you think is best for the illegals versus what law enforcement's responsibilities are. And she doesn't represent, frankly, the illegal immigrants in this country. Her job is to represent the legal residents who came here illegally and the American citizens.
Taxpayers.
And that's where we have this difference, where so many people, instead of saying, you know, the pro-illegal people never use the word illegal. They always will say, you know, it puts fear in immigrants. It doesn't put fear in immigrants. My father was an immigrant. He came here from England. He raised 13 children. And my father didn't walk down the street looking over his shoulder, because he did it the right way. Mm. And that's what we expect of people. Look, we're the most generous country in the world. We, when it comes to immigration, we bring in over 1 million people a year. And it's funny, because when I hear people say, you know, this, you know, you targeting these criminal illegal aliens, it's breaking up families. Well, actually, the truth is, you could say that of me as a sheriff, that I've been breaking up families for 20 years as a sheriff because I have people in my jail who aren't with their families. But it's not me, and it's not our system. It's the person who made the choice knowingly to do something they weren't supposed to do that put their family in that situation. And lastly, I would say that half of the people who come here legally, who wait their turn, are doing family reunification because not all their families could come at once legally, so some waited behind and they waited their turn. And now, so those people have been separated, but they chose to be because some of them could come legally at that time, and the others had to wait because there was just maybe a quota or what have you. And so now they're continuing their process, and they're coming in and they're reuniting with their families here. That's part of what immigration is.
Right. I have to ask, Sheriff, and that is, we got a new administration that's getting settled in right now, but yet we still have, this is political nature. While the representative is one of a few people here in the Commonwealth who are, you know, speaking out in regards to Donald Trump and, you know, his administration's work, you know, push towards doing something with the immigration issue. What's your thoughts on trying to find some partisan way or nonpartisan way to get everybody on the same page when it comes to our immigration policies?
Well, that's a great question. I've been working on immigration reform for 20 years. I started working actually on a bipartisan bill, going back and forth to Washington when Barney Frank was working with Henry Hyde. And we were able to get on the part of a reform piece through on the retroactive clause, which made all the sense in the world because we don't allow retroactivity or double jeopardy in our own system. Why would we do it otherwise? So that bill actually made it through the House. But just before 9/11, it was an election year coming up actually in 2000, and the thing never made it through the Senate. So the problem is that for 20 years now, I blame both sides of the aisle in Congress for using this as a political football, never drilling down and dealing with the issue as they should have. And it was this climate created where they'd speak out of one side of their mouth and say, you know, this is illegal, we got to do something about it. They'd wink and nod, okay, you're not supposed to be here, but we're really not going to do anything. And it would go back and forth, and they'd try to see which party could make the other party look worse to the immigrant community, all around votes and elections. And where we are now, unfortunately, is we're at a place where people feel some people feel very strongly that people should be able to stay here illegally. And there is some arguments, people have been here a very long time, that they would have to find some way for them to, if they were going to allow a percentage of the 11 million to stay, in my view, they'd have to, the person, if they were going to stay, would have to have certain requirements. You'd have to be able to learn the English language within 2 years. You'd have to pay a significant fine. And then you'd have to get your citizenship within a certain amount of time. Others who aren't in that percentage would obviously be moved to deportation because of, you know, crimes that they may have committed. And that would, you know, that's one option of looking at it. But what has to happen is the first immediate thing that needs to be done, we need to secure the borders. You can do all the immigration reform you want, but if those borders aren't secured, none of it will make a difference.
If I can ask, strictly the southern border with Mexico, or do you feel that Canada also we need to support secure both borders?
Oh, no, we need to secure all the borders, and it doesn't mean that there's an actual physical wall.
Right.
I've been to Israel and been to all three borders, Gaza, West Bank. I've been to Golan Heights. They have a very sophisticated system there. There's a mixture of fencing, some high-tech stuff, some things that, you know, are aerial that they use and mixed in with monitoring stations that are monitored by humans. So there's a whole sophisticated, in fact, I've been saying for years, we need to bring the Israelis in and have them sit down with our experts and put our plan together.
Right.
So, and we, not only do we have to secure the borders, but we have to make sure that we are doing the right things at our points of entry. We need biometrics at our points of entry to make sure that when people are coming in, they're properly screened. And we have to provide the proper surveillance around, you know, the ports where, you know, the ships are coming in and things like that. So it's very important that people be channeled through as small an area as possible through the legal process, where checkpoints, you almost have to, if you're going to try and get your way in, it's going to be almost like a funnel, and there's going to be enforcement there where you're likely going to get caught. So that's really, I think, what we have to do. At the same time we're putting this process in place, Congress needs to drill down and start having real meetings around substantive issues, around work visas, around E-Verify, you know, making sure everybody's involved in E-Verify and all these things. And that can be an ongoing process while you're building this wall. But the border wall, or symbolic of the border wall, for the securing of our borders. You know, I often tell people, you know, I had people say I was xenophobic and all of this because, you know, I've been saying it's had almost all the sheriffs around the country for years now. In fact, even the Gang of Eight started. We said, you're making a mistake. We told them, don't do it. Meet with us. Let us tell you what we're seeing. So, but I've had people call me a xenophobe and all these other things. And I say to them, well, listen, if you really believe that we shouldn't have any kind of border wall or any kind of security at our borders, people should just be able to come in, then take the fences down from around your yard, and anybody who wants to move from a lower socioeconomic neighborhood into your neighborhood, you should have no problem with them pitching a tent in your yard. Make sure you run an electric cord out to them if they want it. Make sure if they need food, you provide it and pay for it. Medical, if they want to go to school, you need to make sure they can get to school. But make sure, because you should have no problem with that if you think it's okay for people just to wander into the country, you know, without any kind of accountability or requirement. And I think all of us know we can't sustain that. We're already finding out the schools in Lynn are busting at the seam. The mayor just said that she needed to build a middle school. She's got 500 some odd additional kids. For 2 years she's had no room in her schools. They just turned it down. The voters turned it down, so we're not going to authorize building a middle school. She now has to find a way to put 500 more kids in the school systems where she has no room.
Yeah, this is something that urban centers are going through. Lynn, I believe Brockton and New Bedford are also going through similar, you know, where every year they see, you know, the number of folks who are coming in who are from other countries and how the state kind of calculates the numbers at a certain point in the year compared to the end of the year, and the dollars just aren't adding up, and it is becoming a problem in order to be able to do that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Well, so, good. Do you have something you want to say about?
Well, I was going to tell you something. The few things you probably don't know. Number one, and your listeners, I'm sure, probably don't know this. First of all, when I hear people say we're helping these kids by bringing them here, first of all, most of these kids, when they come, their parents are, particularly the teenage girls, the mothers are handing their daughters off to coyotes from drug cartels, giving them $5,000 to $7,000 to get their kid to the border, to the U.S. The mother gives the child, the teenage girls, they're giving their daughters birth control pills because they know their daughter's going to get raped at least once along the way. Mm. The child arrives here, has no family support to deal with the trauma that she went through along the route. She gets pushed off to New Bedford, Mansfield, Taunton, wherever, and put into a school where she doesn't speak the language, doesn't know the culture, is put in a foster care home. She probably will never learn the language because she doesn't have a rudimentary understanding of her own. She becomes the brunt of all the bullies in the classroom. She goes home with the trauma she faced coming over here, in addition to now the current trauma. She goes home to her foster home. She steps out in the street in the neighborhood and on after school on weekends, and guess who's the weakest link in the neighborhood? She is.
Right.
And I was just talking to an immigrant attorney about this. He does a lot of immigration work. And we were having dinner, and I was telling her, I said, you know, this is crazy. What's going on with these, the people saying they're helping these kids? And he said, you know what? You're right. I can't tell you how many of these children that I've been dealing with, these young girls who are impregnated by gang members in these communities. And the other thing that is really outrageous under the Obama administration in the last year or so of the Obama administration, and I confronted Secretary Jay Johnson's office in Washington at a meeting that we had with the sheriffs. They suspended all FBI criminal history background checks on anyone who wanted to, who has signed up to be a foster care parent for these illegals. It was reported in the Washington Post. The Obama administration admitted it. And we, in just a quick snapshot look at this, the Washington Post uncovered at least two dozen kids who had been raped, sexually abused, physically abused, put in hard labor. And this, and the Obama administration, imagine if we did this with our kids in the United States, where we said, hey, we're not going to check on you, foster parents. We don't know what your background is. We don't care. And there are 3,000 people on that list that had some criminal histories from aggravated assault, assault with intent to kill, rape, all kinds of crimes. And this is what's been going on. So when I hear people say we're helping these kids, we're not. And for all the people who say, well, these people are just coming here for jobs and work and better you know, opportunities to make some money. Well, I get that too, but you got to remember something. We're skimming off the top. If people who are coming here that aren't going to commit crimes but just want to find work, those are people who have work ethics that really do want to get ahead. We're skimming off the best of the best of these countries, and they will never be able to build an economy and self-sustain themselves. They're only going to get worse because we're taking people from their countries who do have a work ethic, who just don't have a country yet that's really invested in giving them opportunities like we give in the United States.
Right.
And it'll never happen as long as we become the crutch for those countries.
Again, we're speaking with Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hutch, and he's been our guest. We got just a couple of minutes left with you, but I want to ask you, Sheriff, as to how instrumental you are in trying to help the Trump administration put forth some kind of immigration reform or given any assistance. I believe that before the election or during the election, you were even saying so much as to, you know, you would lend the assistance of your department to be able to help with things like build a wall and reform immigration.
Well, yeah, or lay the pipes in Flint, Michigan, or whatever. We've got sheriffs all over the country who could bring inmates in there to help out, volunteering to do these kinds of work, save taxpayers' money, move these projects along. But I was in Washington testifying. I had the opportunity to meet the Attorney General as well, along with a few other sheriffs, and it's one of the things we were talking about is how do we, you know, we need to move the reform along. We need to hold people accountable. The judge that let that, I don't know if you know about this, but a judge let there was two ICE agents in the courtroom, I think in Iowa or somewhere, and they were waiting for the judge to finish this case with this individual, and they were going to take the individual into ICE custody. The judge found out that's why ICE was there. She took the individual out the back way and let him go out an employee exit so he wouldn't, so ICE couldn't arrest him.
Oh my.
I told the Attorney General, as far as I'm concerned, federal agents should have moved immediately and arrested that judge on the spot. I mean, we can't have this in this country. And that actually happened. And we had a trooper actually in Washington State who got a call to an accident scene. He arrived. He ran both driver's licenses. One driver's license came back. One of the drivers convicted of a serious felony, deported twice, contact ICE. The trooper immediately picked up his cell phone, called ICE, said, look, I just got ran this through. This is what it said to call you. They said, we'll be right there. They got there. They arrested the individual right there. The next day, that trooper was notified to his department he was under investigation for contacting ICE and letting him know that guy was there. So this officer had one of two choices when he got the call. Go there and run that tag when you found out it said contact ICE. Ignore that notification and commit a felony as a police officer by harboring and concealing this person, or uphold your oath and your promise to the people to enforce the laws and do it with you promised to do and face disciplinary action by your department. Those are the only two choices he had.
Right.
And we can't have that in this country. So I am working with the administration. I'm working with DHS. We had a meeting with the undersecretary as well while I was there to talk about how we can make sure that people are held without being released on detainers and things like that. So, you know, we're doing what we can, and I certainly will continue to do as I've been doing and working with federal government to try to get this immigration reform through in a sensible way and make sure we can keep our citizens safe.
Well, if there are updates, I welcome you back on the program so we can further discuss and explore future possibilities in regards to immigration reform. I would ask you one last question. We got about a minute left. if you bumped into State Representative Michelle DeWatt, and I asked her this same question, if she bumped into you as well, if you bumped into her, what would the exchange be like?
Well, look, I just finished doing a thing at New England School of Law with the mayor of Somerville, who I said both he and Marty Walsh, if it's determined that they're harboring, concealing anybody, they should have arrest warrants issued against them. They're no different than the constituents. And we had a very perfectly, I mean, we have a very impassioned exchange there, but not in an insultive way. It was professional. We gave our different views. And afterwards, he came up and he said, "Hey, you know, I got a lot of respect for you." He said, "And how do we, there's some things we agree on. How do we get that started?" I said, "Well, you and me need to go to Washington and tell Congress that we're tired of our communities fighting over their inaction. And we want them now to take some action and get some reform done." And it would be, I would express to her why I feel that what she did is absolutely inappropriate and would hope that she wouldn't do it again, and why it's so serious. I don't know that she really completely understands that. But it would not be, I grew up in a family of 13 kids. I'm somebody who believes that you listen to each other, you have your different points of view, and hopefully, in this instance, for me, I hope that it's, be prevailing in my discussion with her that she would understand that you can't put law enforcement at risk, and you can't give criminals harbor and concealment.
Well, Sheriff, thank you so much for being on the program, and we'll look forward to having you on sometime in the future.
Love to do it. Thanks for having me. Have a great night.
You as well. Hey, that's all the time that we have here. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a great evening.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.